Can you hear me? Oh, yeah, there we go. Good morning to you. Good to see everyone. Good to be with you today. So good to be here for in-person worship as well as online worship. It's always a privilege, and I'm always humbled to get to come to Cokesbury. So thank you, Pastor Sheila and Pastor Ashley, for this opportunity to come once again. It's always an honor, I feel, to get to come back and preach in this place and get to preach now today in the open air. You know we're in good company when we do this, right? Founder of Methodism, John Wesley, had a great impact on people preaching in the open air. Of course, we're in good company with Jesus too, right? It's where he did most of his preaching. So good to be here today, and glad you're here to be a part of this service. Actually, this is my first time to preach since COVID. Since I've retired 5 years ago, I've preached a number of times in different places. And here, I guess back in June of 2019, I believe. Was that right before you came? Yes. Yeah. And I was excited then that Sheila Bates was becoming your lead pastor. And I mentioned that day. And I know you're excited to have her. So good to be here. And thank you again for the opportunity, Sheila. Appreciate her friendship and leadership that she's given here, not only but in other places as well. And appreciate so much the friendship we have as colleagues in ministry together. In my retirement years, I've not been serving as a pastor of a church, as some retired clergy do, or join a church staff, as some do, but I've been doing clergy coaching, which is a process of walking with clergy through a season of ministry, somewhat as a thinking partner, dealing with whatever the issues that are on their plate happen to be. And you know what those issues have been in the last several months. So I've been walking with 7 different clergy through this time, as you as a church have been walking through this pandemic season and now this hurricane recovery time, and all the issues of this day that we are dealing with. They're all looking at the same issues, trying to figure out the same thing. How do we go forward as the church? How do we best do ministry together as the church? How do we fulfill our mission as the church in this kind of time, in this kind of day? Everyone's trying to figure it out, and it brings quite a bit of stress on us, doesn't it? We're having to deal with a lot. I'm aware of many people who have been impacted by COVID specifically. People we know, family member, who's had to deal with this, even being to the point of being hospitalized. We know numbers of people who have died from this disease. Maybe you've been impacted in similar ways that we have. We're fortunate to have stayed safe and well so far and doing our best to do that. So we're just aware of the impact it's having, not to mention all the division that is being experienced in this country and all the disruption and all that we're about and trying to get our minds around. We're trying to figure all this out as families, in one's family life and work life and all the gatherings and events. What do we do and how do we do it and how do we make things happen? How do we maintain a sense of community as the church? How do we keep this sense of belonging going? How do we, which involves touch in so many ways, how do we do this in a no-touch pandemic? But we're figuring it out. Not the same, but we're figuring it out. So I commend you for ways you're making efforts to get your mind around this as a church, get your heart around this, and to figure the way forward, even and especially in the midst of this time of pandemic, in the midst of this aftermath of Hurricane Sally. Actually, I believe our scripture from 127 is particularly appropriate for this season of life. Psalm 127 is one of a collection of psalms called Songs of Ascent. Songs of Ascent. Ascent meaning to go up. To go up. This is one of the songs or psalms that would be used by pilgrims going up to Jerusalem as they were making a religious journey, going to celebrate a certain religious festival or a certain religious occasion in Jerusalem. And they literally did go up, for at least most of them, because Jerusalem is about 2,500 feet above sea level, and most of the villages and towns from which people would come were much lower than that, including Jericho down to the south, that's 864 feet below sea level, the lowest city on earth. So a song of ascent, going up to Jerusalem. And they would either use these songs along the way or after they had arrived. I say this psalm is particularly appropriate for this season of life we find ourselves in because it addresses the scope of life. It addresses the scope of life. The life of building a home, building a family. The life of building a community, the life of one's work life, just life in general. It speaks of God's particular place in the scope of life and of the importance of living out the story of our lives in concert with God's story. Here in this psalm, we have a vision of life centered in God, one that identifies the essential place of God in the midst of all of life. It essentially says that unless the enterprises of building family and home and church and community and life together, unless these enterprises are seen as enterprises of God, they become empty exercises. I guess I want to say and remind us as we gather here in this particular context that we're living in, that though there's been so much sickness and though there have been so many deaths and so much disruption and challenges have come our way this year, I'm reminded this is not God's first pandemic. This is not God's first storm. It's not God's first time of walking with creation through most challenging times. I'm reminded that God does not change. Though life changes for us, though much changes for us, God does not change because God is. He is the great I am. This is what Moses learned when Moses was being called to go lead the people of the Hebrew children from slavery in Egypt to freedom in the promised land. And after finally agreeing to this mission, Moses said, "Well, okay, God, who will I say has sent me? What is your name?" And God says, "I am that I am." Simply saying, "God, I am." This is who God is. He is the great I am. We see this echoed in the New Testament in the Gospel of John, where all the I am sayings of Jesus are, where Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life." We see this I am-ness of God at work. He is the great I am. He is the source, the foundation, the creator, sustainer, redeemer. He is our strength and our hope. His mercy, love, and grace just are. Just are. Regardless of what happens in life, God is. One youth musical put it this way: God is love, God is light, God is faithful day and night. He is eternal, though he never changes, though the seas rise up and swallow mountain ranges. God is interested in you and me, wanting us to be the best we can be. We're not perfect living the way we do, but he knows just what we're going through, for God is love and God is light. God is faithful day and night. He is eternal. He never changes, though the seas rise up and swallow mountain ranges. God is. God is. I remember as a teenager when I started really paying attention in worship. Now, I must say there were a lot of years I didn't pay attention. I was there. I was interested in who was there and being with my friends and wondering what they were going to be doing through the week. And we spent a lot of time talking about those things. But we were in worship. I just remember when I started getting interested, and it wasn't a conscious decision. It just started happening. I found myself actually anticipating Sunday morning worship. I wanted to hear the story of God and the story of the gospel. I found myself wondering how my story might intertwine with God's story, how it might fit in. It was about that same time I began to take seriously what was our Methodist Youth Fellowship motto, Christ above all. I began to try to figure out how Christ might be above all in my life. And I began to be drawn to the power of the gospel and the gospel story. I realized that what was happening, God was at work, calling me to live my life wherever it took me with Christ at the center. I would submit that God would have us all as we go about all of life, personal life, family life, community life, work life, church life, all of life. God would have us seeking to figure out how to intertwine our story with his story, how to live out life with Christ above all. We work at that as the church, as individuals and as a church, to be that kind of person in that kind of place. I was reflecting with one of the folks that I'm privileged to journey with in the coaching relationship recently, how across the years of my life I'd failed to do that so many times, failed to live up to that intention. But somehow I said, you know, God would not let go of me anyway. He kept coming back and saying, okay, I'm going to get a hold of you again, and I'm going to use you in this ministry some way, somehow. It's amazing how God would take us as we are, take our story, and intertwine that story with his story, so that we're living our lives in that context, seeking to live out each day, trying to put Christ above all. God would have us all live our lives understanding he would be the center of that life. Christ really would be above all. We would intertwine the scope of our story with the scope of God's story, the very story of the good news and the power of the gospel. I like the way Dean Greg Jones of Duke Divinity School speaks of this. He talks about being grafted onto God's story. He talks about the way you take a branch of one tree and graft it onto another, and that creates something new. So when we graft our story onto God's story, new possibilities open up. I think of all the new things churches have done in these days. Prime example, this, right? Think of all the new things that churches have done, trying to figure all this out, how to maintain the community of faith, how to fulfill the mission. I think of all the Zoom calls that have been made, all the Zoom classes that have been held, all the Zoom meetings. In fact, I was setting up a call with someone not long ago, and I said, would you like to just talk on the phone, or you want to use Zoom? He said, well, I'm Zoomed out. How about, let's just talk on the phone, like we used to. I think of all the new things that are being done and how churches are trying to be the church that God is calling us to be. I guess what I wonder, Pastor Sheila, I wonder, what are we going to take from this time when the pandemic is over, when storm recovery is far in the rearview mirror? What are we going to take from this time that will take us to a new place, new opportunity? Over the years of ministry, I've had three questions in my mind, on and off. One of them is, what have we been doing that we need to stop doing? Maybe that's a question for this time. What has the church done in the past that going forward maybe does not need to continue to do? I don't know. It's just a question. A second question, what do we need to keep doing and do it even better? And a third question, what do we need to start doing that we have not done before? I wonder about that. And I don't know how high on the list those kinds of questions might be as we continue to be in the midst of this moment. And there's so much work to be done. I'm just looking across the way at the sanctuary roof and all the damage that has occurred, I understand, from the storm. So there's so much right in our midst. The tyranny of the urgent is upon us. And we just have to deal with what comes this day. And this we must. But I cannot help but wonder what God might be calling us to into the future as a church. I was a pastor at Gulf Shores 16 years ago when Hurricane Ivan came ashore. We had a good bit of damage to our sanctuary as well. We had a roof that looked sort of like that, had blue tarps on it. All our electrical wiring got soaked in the sanctuary. Sound system was gone. The ceiling had to be completely replaced. The one wall had to be replaced. All the carpet, of course, the end caps of the pews all had to be replaced. We had one electrical outlet in the sanctuary that worked. Now, we could still worship in the sanctuary. If you've ever seen that Gulf Shore sanctuary, it has three very large, wide windows that are clear glass. There's a clear story right in the center of the roof. And so light floods in. So we could continue to worship there. We had a big bucket that sat right near the pulpit because the blue tarps wouldn't hold out all the rain. We had a cry room. We called it an infant comfort room. Mothers and their babies, fathers and babies, children could sit in that space right at the back of the sanctuary on one side. They could participate in worship but be in a separate space. That room was inundated with water. So as we worshiped in that place, in the condition it was in, we moved all the rocking chairs out from that room and put them in the back on one side. And it was a very special experience, mothers rocking their babies during worship. And babies making little baby sounds, sometimes crying. But they were always welcome in worship, but it was just kind of special to see them doing that as we worshiped. When Ivan hit the church, we were in the process of buying the shopping center next door. It had come available. We needed more space. We needed larger spaces. We needed the parking. And so we were in the process of trying to buy it. And 2 months after Hurricane Ivan, the congregation voted overwhelmingly to buy the shopping center. There were 13 tenants there, including Winn-Dixie and Family Dollar and Tuesday Morning and a lot of small businesses and one very large, what we called a 5 and 10 cent store. And as tenant leases expired, our plan was to take over the space and transform it into church ministry space. Two tenants did not renew leases. They did not want to continue after the storm, so we took over two spaces right next to Winn-Dixie immediately and transformed them, 5,500 square feet. When we moved out of the sanctuary to let the sanctuary have the sanctuary repaired from the storm, it took about 7 months. We moved into the space next to Winn-Dixie. One of our visions for the shopping center had been the hope that people who might never come in our sanctuary would come into public shopping center space, even though it had been changed into church ministry space. We set up 350 chairs every Saturday for 7 months, and after the third morning service on Sunday in that space, we would ask people if they were able to pick up a chair or two and put it again, fold it up and put it against the wall on each side. But what began to happen was people we'd never seen before began to come. One couple said, might never come into our sanctuary. But many new faces begin to emerge and begin to show up in that shopping center space. We realized that God was giving us new opportunities. Right here in the midst of all the while we were focusing on how to repair what we had, how to get the sanctuary back to where it had been, how to get the church facility back to where it had been. In the midst of all that, here was God saying, if you graft yourself onto my story, remember, something new will be created. And we were seeing some new opportunities and new possibilities in our midst. And we sought to capitalize on them and open our doors as wide as possible. I love what someone said. Some organizations focus on not sinking the ship, but the best organizations focus on not missing the boat. Oops. Certainly, Cokesbury must be about the business of righting the Cokesbury ship, of getting things back to where they were. But in the process, let us make sure Cokesbury does not miss the boat, not miss the opportunities, that we do not miss whatever God may be doing and whatever new ways God may be calling us to bring Christ to people and people to Christ. For when we dare to intertwine our story with God's story, when we dare to graft our story onto God's story, new possibilities emerge. You know, maybe what Psalm 127 really is about us getting out of the way and let God lead the way. Letting God lead the way as we intertwine our story with God's story, and with the power of the gospel story, and with the story of Jesus, who is the way. Back at the 1st of January, before COVID, we were visiting with some friends, good friends of ours, And they were telling us what they were planning for the new year. Really, it was a New Year's resolution conversation. They were talking about New Year's resolutions, and after they talked about what they were doing, they looked at me and said, "Neil, what are your New Year's resolutions?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm kind of like the little boy who every time he went outside, he got dirty. It didn't matter if he was outside 5 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour. He came in, he was dirty from head to toe. His mother was somewhat flabbergasted by it. Finally, she said, "Son, how do you get so dirty? Whether you go out 2 minutes or 20 minutes, how do you always come in? How do you get so dirty?" And he looked at her very seriously and said, "Mom, I just live. I just live." So I looked at my friends and said, "You know, in 2020, my plan is to just live. To just live. To just be and let God be who God would be in and through me. To just do and let God do what God would do in and through me. To just work and let God work in and through me. To just live and let God live in and through me." Maybe this day, this time, is really about just living. Just living. And letting God be who He would be through us individually, through us as a church, through us as families, through us in our work, through us in our community, through us as we go about all of life. Maybe it's about just living. May it be so. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.